Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're going to talk cardiology this morning. Mary Washington Healthcare in, and Dr. Clarence Finley is in. Dr. Finley, it is great to meet you. Welcome to the area and welcome to the show this morning.
Good morning, Ted, and thanks for having me.
It is great to have you here. Talk a little bit about what you do with Mary Washington Healthcare.
Yeah, sure. Mary Washington has just started their own branch of cardiology, or their own cardiology group. And I'm one of the first individuals to come in, and we have several other providers coming online here within the next month. A lot of us focus on general cardiology, interventional cardiology, as well as electrophysiology. Specifically, I am an interventional and structural cardiologist. And so if you think about it, think about the heart like a house. I focus on the plumbing as well as the carpentry work within the house. And so a lot of the patients that I see have chest discomfort, cardiac or heart causes of shortness of breath, palpitations, or feeling like their heart's racing, feeling like they're going to pass out. And I also do procedures where I go in and I put in stents to open up blockages. If patients are having, you know, emergencies where we're driving in the middle of the night to get into the hospital to get them taken care of, that's also something that I do. We also focus on closing holes in hearts. That's the carpentry work that I just discussed. We also place devices in the heart for patients who have atrial fibrillation. And we can talk about that a little bit more, but patients who have atrial fibrillation and are required or recommended, I should say, to take a blood thinner but cannot, we have devices that we can place in the heart to help minimize their risk of stroke and obviate or get around the need to have to take the blood thinners. So the other things that we do also is address heart valves. So patients may have heard of some of their friends undergoing something called a TAVR, transaortic valve replacement, and so that's another procedure that we will offer and will be coming online here pretty shortly.
It is just amazing as you discuss this, what technology has had, what you can do to the heart and the things that you just discussed. To me, it's just amazing what medicine can do in so many ways, but especially the heart and the things that you can do.
100%, we stand on the shoulders of giants. There are a lot of people who kind of pioneered this work back in the 70s and 80s, and now I can get a lot of this stuff done through a small hole in your wrist.
That's just as amazing.
A small hole in your groin. So you're 100% correct. It's absolutely amazing.
How does that happen? I just can't imagine how that happens, because I can remember grandparents or elderly people in my church when I was growing up would have these things, would have these just huge scars. And you don't have to do that anymore.
Right. So the scars are still required in certain instances.
Sure.
But there are patients who are good candidates for chest stents or good candidates for valve replacements through the blood vessels. And we'll employ those procedures in scenarios where we absolutely need to. We know that's the right thing for our patients.
It must be exciting to be here in this area at this time as Mary Washington sets up a cardiology group. And you being one of the first people coming in on it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to take this position. You're sort of coming in at the ground up. You can help build something that you can be proud of when you look back 10, 15 years from now. You know, I've been in the clinic just a short time. I started late June, early July, and one of the consistent comments I get from patients is, hey, we like you, but are you going to be around, right? And so that's an issue, I think, that is sort of maybe germane to this community, and one of the promises that I have on my end is to kind of stay here, grow roots, and help to grow Mary Washington Cardiology to something that we can all be proud of.
That's exciting.
Absolutely.
That is exciting. We're going to take a quick break and come back. I want to talk about how you got into this, and we'll delve into some of the other things. I'm so glad when you described it as plumbing and carpentry, because I look when you look at what you do, you know, interventional cardiology, and you just think, what in the world is that? What a great explanation.
And my plan is to break it down. Everything, it's all simple. I'm a simple man, so we'll take you down the simple path.
Dr. Clarence Finley from Mary Washington Healthcare here this morning. Quick break. We'll be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Good stuff this morning as we talk about your heart. Dr. Clarence Finley from Mary Washington Healthcare is here this morning. How did you get involved in this? This is the interest. Where did it come from?
I always remember as a child sitting down with my father watching sort of animal shows. And there was just something interesting to me about the way that these animals interacted, much like humans. We set up societies and there's a hierarchy, et cetera, et cetera. And so you dig a little deeper and it's just kind of this desire to figure out how things work. Why are things set up the way that they are? And naturally, I'm a very logical person. Mm-hmm. And cardiology within the fields of medicine is something that's very logical. There's not a lot of memorization. You just, you know, you put two and two together and it always comes out to be four generally, unless there's something wrong with the system. And so with that as the backdrop, it just kind of naturally led me into cardiology. It's very simple. It's a pump, right? And then you have pipes at a very basic level. And then you have doors, right, which serves as sort of your valves that open and shut, and walls, which are the holes in between the different chambers. And you just use that as your base. And from there, everything else becomes simple.
I saw there's a great video of you on the Mary Washington Healthcare site, and you talk about that you knew at 11 years old that this is what you wanted to do.
That's correct. I could remember Dr. Beisel was her name. We had a teacher. She was a sixth grade teacher, and we had to do a little book report on what we wanted to do, and I put down I wanted to become a doctor. I knew I wanted to work with the heart. I didn't know if I wanted to be a surgeon or on the cardiology side. At that time, I said I wanted to go to Stanford. So it almost worked out. I became a physician. I didn't go to Stanford, but we're good with it now. Where I ended up was fine. So that was me pretending the future at that point in time. But I knew since that age.
Wow, that's that. What a great fact that you know that, yeah. And that you knew that, and that was a goal. That's a great thing, yeah. Especially in this field.
Very fortunate. I'm very fortunate, and to have the family and the support to kind of make sure that that's where I ended up, I think is also important, right? So you have to have a lot of teachers who take interest in you. That's mm-hmm. why teaching, when we send our kids to school every day, it's extremely important that those kids are being pushed and supported the way that they need to, so that we can have the positive outcomes and end up actualizing and realizing our dreams.
And so many of us, when you're in school, you talk about when am I ever going to use this kind of thing. But to have that kind of vision and focus, you can know a lot of this stuff.
It helps. It helps for sure.
Well, and this is Dr. Finley. This is an area, because heart disease is, if it's not number one, it's right up there, isn't it? As far as the death
in the Western world, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a big issue, and I think a lot of it has to do with diet. A lot of it has to do with exercise or the lack thereof. A lot of it has to do with the stresses that Western society brings upon us, right? And we have to be aware of all those things, those complex issues, and how they contribute to our overall health. And at a personal level, it's genetics as well. And so looking at your family and your family history and where others who are older than you have gone also plays into sort of what you need to be doing to ensure that you can live the best quality life and the longest life you can lead. And I really highlight quality as a big issue, because if you're living into late age, but you can't do the things you want to do, you know, that's sort of, some people may think that that's good, but for me, I think there's a little bit more to extract out of life. So we really want longevity and quality, and that's what we're pushing for.
The genetic part is a big thing, and especially in this, you know, a lot of times, so many times you'll hear about someone with a family history, and you can see it. It's there. If I have a family history, when do I start contacting someone like you or starting to, you know, take this seriously?
Very good question. So one of the first questions I ask patients when I see them is what their family history is. Who in their family has been affected by heart disease, by strokes, right, needing to have stents placed in their legs, because it's all connected, right?
Yeah.
The vasculature is all connected. And generally we say around the age of 40 is where individuals need to start getting screened, okay? And we've come up with good screening tools, something called a calcium score, which is relatively cheap to get. And that helps us risk stratify patients. And so we can have a patient who comes in, if they get a score less than 100, we can say, hey, keep doing what you're doing, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a score that's 1,000, now we need to talk about, you know, medical therapy and also some physiologic readouts, meaning stress tests, et cetera, to make sure that there are no blockages that we need to go in and try and address. So the age of 40, consider getting a coronary calcium score, particularly if you have a strong family history of heart disease. That's the best way to put it.
And like you say, so depending on what your score is, then that will determine how often then I have to come and see you or get checked up?
How often medications and what potential different additional tests you may need to do at that time to make sure that you're okay.
If I start having chest pains, that's one of the real basic things when we're talking about heart. When do I start getting concerned about that, and when should I see someone or even go to the emergency room?
Sure. We'll deal with sort of the classic description of chest discomfort in the setting of heart disease, and then we'll start to talk a little bit more about the atypical presentations, the ones that don't sort of follow the normal path or the textbook. So classic can be any form of chest discomfort. And what I always tell patients is discomfort means something that that you're experiencing in the chest that is generally not there. So pressure, heaviness, squeezing sensation, burning sensation, tightness, etc. And if they notice it particularly when they exert themselves, mm-hmm. and that discomfort relieves when they rest, then that's something that we would want to know about, or your physician should want to know about. In these scenarios, you can start with your primary care, and if they're concerned, they'll bump you up to the cardiologist. So again, anything that is sort of exertional related, I walk up a flight of stairs, I get some chest discomfort, I have to sit and rest, let it pass, and then I can continue on. Or I walk up a flight of stairs, I can't even get to the top, I'm so short of breath. So
yeah.
The other thing that we talk about is shortness of breath. And you have to tease out whether it's deconditioning or being out of shape versus there's something else going on, right? So that's what the physician is going to be in a position to do. Chest discomfort, shortness of breath are really sort of the big things that we pay attention to. The other thing is fatigue. And so patients will oftentimes tell you that they just can't get through their day like they used to. I go out in the garden, I do a little bit of gardening, and I'm wiped out for the rest of the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they may have that in addition to the shortness of breath and the chest discomfort, worse with exertion, relieved with rest. And so those are sort of the classic symptoms. You can have discomfort not only in the left arm. We always talk about only pain going down my left arm.
Right.
Oftentimes it's pain we call paresthesias or tingling or a numbness sensation. Oftentimes it goes down into your pinky finger and then your ring finger. It's sort of, you know, on that aspect of the arm. But you can also have discomfort on the right side, right arm. I've had patients who came in and all they had was they felt like whenever they exerted themselves, they would develop a vice grip around that right bicep area, and that was it. That was their only symptom. So you just have to pay attention to the story, when it comes, when it goes, and then that kind of helps to clue you in on what may be important and what you need to then do to help get yourself evaluated. So start with your primary care, and if they're concerned, they'll move you on to a cardiologist. The atypical presentations, and I harp on this, particularly for females present differently. And what I mean by that is oftentimes they'll say, I just have indigestion. I get up, I move around, I get really bad indigestion, I take Tums. And then I normally will ask, well, are you increasing your Tums ingestion? Well, 6 months ago, I only had to take one or two a month, but now I'm taking like several a day. That's a sign that something may be going on with the heart. It seems like indigestion, but in fact, it could actually be heart.
Yeah. Okay?
And so pay attention to that. The other things that females will sometimes experience is, again, exertional-related discomfort going into the neck and the jaw. Nothing to do with the chest or into their back. And so we have to, again, pay attention to that. Is this worse with exertion, improved with rest? And again, that's another sign. So so those are the big things that I highlight for the females. The indigestion, the neck and the jaw discomfort are the sort of things that seem to characterize how females, if they present differently, will present.
Interesting. I did not know that. I guess one of the worst things you can do is just ignore this and just try to rationalize it. And like you say, that it's some of these may be that you are out of shape. But especially I would just think that the tightening of the chest would scare me.
Right.
That kind of thing would.
And that's good. And that would mean that you'd respond to that. But some patients say it's just me getting older. I hear that a lot. I just figured it was age. I just figured it happens when I get older. And I tell patients, when you think about age, don't compare yourself to 20 years ago. Compare yourself to 1 or 2 years ago. And so if you could have done whatever you're trying to do now 2 years ago, you should be able to do it now. And that's your tip-off that something may be different and you need to seek help.
Well, and especially when we started out and you talked about the things you can do and how you can do them, it must be frustrating at times to think, I wish I had seen you 6 months ago.
That thought does come across, but we're all in a position to help, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, most importantly, again, is really cluing in on that longevity and quality aspect of life and trying to get you back on that trend or that line Which is where I think we all want to be again. Good quality, good longevity.
Yeah, yeah. No, and just to know that there's help in this community. That's what's exciting to have you here today and have you here talking about what's available, that I don't have to go an hour and a half or a couple of hours or make that long drive. There is help and there's assistance in this community right now with you and others.
That's 100% correct. So any of those issues that we kind of just addressed can be taken care of here locally. You don't have to hop in the car and drive and then worry about how you're going to follow up afterwards and deal with the fight with all that traffic on 95. I'm not interested in that traffic, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So we have a local option, and the goal is really to try to get you to come in, try us out. Right. I think a lot of this is experience and making sure whoever you're seeing, you're comfortable with. And if we can pass that muster, I think you'll find this a very viable option and something that you'll be happy is here in your own community.
Well, I like when you said just in the last segment when we talked a few minutes ago about you're going to be here. And especially in this case, I guess I would want to have a doctor. If I establish a relationship with you and you're going to be checking up on me and I'm going to be, you know, I've seen you, I would like to see the same person.
Yeah, continuity is great, right? Because I think it does several things. One is I get to know you as a person. And oftentimes, if I've seen you multiple times, I know a little bit about you, a little bit about your family, where you went to vacation the last several months. And that could be part of our visit, right? Which I think is important because we're all humans and want to connect in that way. But the medical side of it is that I also know when you start falling off. I'm very observational. I think a lot of physicians we train to be able to walk into a room and observe and figure out things without even people talking. And I can tell with my patients who I've seen multiple times, there's something wrong. And I'll pull it out of them, right? And eventually they'll give it to you, but you would not have been able to know that something is wrong if you had only seen them once in the past or saw them 2 or 3 years ago and never saw, you know. That repeated exposure, I think, is something that's important.
How important is it for families to talk about this is just as far as history goes? Because I ran into this, my kids didn't know something about skin cancer in my family, and they had been asked about it and said, we don't have it, when in fact they did. And this seems like something that if you know of a grandfather or, you know, what, someone that had this kind of thing in your family to talk about it,
100%.
People can give you the correct information.
100%. I think that's it's important for you to be 100% aware of your family history, both sides,
mm-hmm.
because as we discussed, that dovetails into likely how you're going to end up in the future. It helps us as physicians risk stratify you, call out the right tests to be performed. And then I think there's just the general awareness that's important, because if I know, without even having to interact with the doctor, that my family history has heart disease, I'm going to try to stay off some of the things, the high fat, the high cholesterol. I'm going to make sure that we exercise and all those things that are important to maximize, again, quality of life and longevity. So not only is it important for you and your medical history and passing that information on to the physicians, it's important for you as an individual. It's important for your children to understand kind of what things may be in their future so that they can start making changes now to remedy it.
We talk about all the great things that you can do, and but if I don't understand the signs and come in, you can't do that.
That's
so that's
correct.
There really is in some cases, I guess the thought that I might have to see a cardiologist is something totally new, and again I'm rationalizing and thinking I can't possibly need to see you, and I may very well do.
Yeah.
And
I think we, you know, just yesterday I saw a patient who clearly was very nervous when she came in, and I had to recognize that and take my time, right? Make sure that we ask questions, try to establish a rapport. And she thanked me at the end for saying, you know, I came in a little nervous and I'm not necessarily feeling that way now. So it's incumbent upon us as the providers to sort of, you know, get a sense as to what's going on, respond to it, to make sure that patients are comfortable so that they feel comfortable telling you what's going on and also entrusting their care in you, right? Because that's a big issue. Patients can come to you, but if they don't trust you, then that's another concern there,
yeah,
as well.
Boy, it must be, that's the end of some days or after seeing certain patients, a great feeling to know we really averted something here.
Yes, that's why we do it, I think, for most of us. It's really that ability to help people in ways that a lot of other people can't. It's a great feeling for sure.
Yeah, no, we all deal with a heart, and all of our, everybody's different.
Yes, 100%.
And you're dealing with whether it's family history or, like you say, and we'll as we go along this morning, we'll talk more about just the importance of exercise and the importance of eating right.
Extremely important.
That seems to be really one of the key things.
You want me to talk?
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, diet and exercise, I always tell patients, let's say you come in and you get a stress test, of the normal, we do a heart catheterization, we actually end up having to put a stent in. My party line is always, I've done 50% of the work. The next 50% of the work starts with you, right? And what that means is diet and exercise and everything they can do on their end. So the ACC, or American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, and recommends at least 30 minutes of moderate intensity 5 days out of the week. And I 100% agree with that. If you can do more, obviously do more is better. So 30 to 60 minutes would be appropriate. I think you need to do aerobic, focus on the aerobic exercise, and then also incorporate some weightlifting, because we need to make sure that we have enough strength as we move on into our early ages, particularly in the core. So those things are 100% important. Diet, and probably the only diet that has been shown to reverse heart disease, has been shown to reverse diabetes, is a whole food plant-based diet, and that's something that you can research on the internet. But it really focuses on nothing coming out of a package. If you get a vegetable, you are literally cutting it and peeling it yourself and eating it. Grains, you know, everything out of the ground, nothing, no animal products, and that really has been shown to literally reverse some of the issues that we see, the heart disease, the diabetes, et cetera. Another diet that has been sort of discussed to help kind of keep things at bay, if you will, within the cardiology or cardiovascular realm, is a Mediterranean diet. And that one, we really push the good fats, you know, lean cuts of meat, trying to minimize beef. And if you do eat beef, you're looking at more grass-fed varieties, more fish, healthy grains, etc. And so those two diets are really what I push, whole food plant-based diet versus Mediterranean. And I think that there's good evidence for why those diets tend to increase longevity and, again, the quality of life that we're after. So exercise absolutely, positively has to be integrated. The last thing I want to say about that, there is a difference between exercise and activity. Right. So I cut the grass this weekend. That's not exercise. That's activity. Strenuous activity. It was hot outside and I'm pushing a lawnmower up the hill.
Yeah.
But that's not exercise. Exercise is defined time, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, no disruptions. And it's just time where you're investing in yourself. Right. So this morning I got up 4:30. I rolled out the bed. That's just me. I'm a morning person. And I was on the treadmill. I did hiking on my treadmill. It goes up to a 40% incline. And then I did 30 minutes on my little Peloton bike, strenuous. And I was dripping in sweat. That's exercise, right? Where you come out and you feel good and you know that you've contributed. Then activity is the other thing that we need to do. That's important. It's an adjunct, but it's not a replacement for the exercise.
Exercise versus activity. That's interesting.
Yes. 100%. That distinction is very important.
Yeah. Well, I could talk to you for an hour about that. That's a really interesting that puts a lot of things into focus and shows that you do need to focus, like you say, just focus on
create
exercise.
That defined time. It's very important.
Yeah,
for sure.
Take a break. We'll continue on this morning. Dr. Clarence Finley here, a cardiologist with Mary Washington Healthcare. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:32.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Wow, good stuff this morning with Dr. Clarence Finley with Mary Washington Healthcare, an interventional cardiologist. And before we get out of here this morning, I'll let him again. He did a great job, Dr. Finley, of just describing what you do. You're very good at being able to talk about things in a manner that we all understand.
Yes.
And I thank you for that. And because I know if I were sitting down next to you and a thousand things would be going through my mind.
Right.
And I guess just like you said, just sort of getting a base of just being comfortable with each other.
So I'll share a personal story. I've been in a position where I ended up in the ICU. I had blood clots in my lungs and I had to stay in the ICU for 2 nights. This is when I was finishing up medical school, actually. In the best shape of my life, I could run 12 miles, 6 minute splits, et cetera, but it happened, right? And this again goes back to possibly genetics contributing to that scenario, although anyway, but possibly genetics.
Yeah.
In any event, I was scared. I didn't sleep for a week. I can remember that. Even after I was discharged and went home, I didn't sleep. And that fear kind of transformed into what other people may be thinking when they're in the hospital, in an ICU bed or a hospital bed, and how they may be processing things. And so it's important that we take the time, we make sure that they understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I know how I felt, and I actually knew what was going on. And so in that scenario, I try to translate kind of my specific experience and my emotions at the time to what I would hopefully be able to provide for patients, and that is that calm, that sense of education, so they know what's going on.
Well, and just the way you described that, you know, being in the best shape of your life, all of those things don't necessarily mean that something can't be going on.
100%. And I always tell people, in fact, this is the way that the emergency room doc, when he diagnosed it, he was actually a friend of mine at the time, he diagnosed it, and he said, do you want to see the CT scan? I said, not necessarily. He said, you have a lot of clot, and if you were older, you probably wouldn't be here with us, was his response. And so I understood that it was actually the work that I had put in with working out and doing all that other business helped me to get through that relatively unscathed. Hmm. And had I not been in shape, that would have been probably a very difficult thing for me to kind of pull through. And so that's why I always tell my patients, they may have a heart attack. They say, doc, I do everything I'm supposed to do. I exercise, I take my medications, I do this. Why did this happen? I tell them, you can't run from your genetics, number one. And number two, if you weren't doing it, this blow would have been worse. You wouldn't be walking out the hospital in 2 days. And that's really the way that we should be thinking about it. It's not, we're putting in work for our future self. It may stave off the disease, or it may sort of lessen the blow, if you will.
And if I haven't been doing those things, start today, because I can get on the right track.
It's never too late. The thing is, start slow. Slow. Hmm. Every day you get out, you go for a walk. If you don't do any activity whatsoever, 5 minutes of walking, just walk out your front door. I always tell patients, particularly in this heat, try to go out as early in the morning or late in the evening as you can, and do your 5-minute walk and come back. Time yourself. And then every week, increase it by a minute. Your goal is to slowly, slowly get to the point where you can do the things you want to do. And people will magically start to feel better, less fatigued, more energetic. It's amazing how it makes a difference. And then if you have mood issues, depression, anxiety, et cetera, it'll keep all that stuff pretty stable. And that it helps me, right? When I'm in a procedure and things are not going well or whatever, I am completely even keeled. I don't yell. There's no need for any of that. And a lot of it is because all the aggression I got out with my morning workout. So now it's just time to kind of settle into the day.
Get on a good diet, and if you're smoking, stop smoking.
Smoking is, that's a big issue. I personally will tell you that the patients that I've seen stop smoking are those that decide they're going to stop smoking and just stop. We have a lot of agents to help, nicotine, Chantix, et cetera, but I've not had one patient who took any of those things who actually stopped. So it has to be something that you believe in and you're committed to and just make it happen.
I guess one of the things, and maybe I'm wrong in this, because I'm just thinking as you have told stories and talked about this, none of us can feel like I'm immune to heart problems because of genetics, or I do this, maybe. But we need to realistically look at this and say I could be.
We all could be. I mean, cancer could, you know, cancer is sort of number two in the Western world, so that could become an issue. We just don't know where we're going to end up. But I think putting in the work, being good to our future self. And that means diet and exercise, and teaching our kids about diet and exercise. That's important. And that's really what we, I think, need to be focusing on to ensure that they also have, again, good quality of life and longevity. None of us wants them to pass before we pass.
At the beginning, we talked about a number of things that you do or are available with Mary Washington. Of all that you do, do you have certain procedures that you find the most effective, or I hate to say you enjoy doing, because when you're doing this, it's in a situation, but there must be certain things that you know that have a good result, and you're glad to be able to do them.
Sure. So the heart cath is something that a lot of patients will talk about. It's a procedure where we go into the wrist or through the groin up to the heart and can take pictures of the heart arteries with dye. That's a very standard procedure. We do it. It can take us about 15 minutes to at least get the pictures. In scenarios where you're having symptoms and we're having to do this procedure, putting in a stent can really minimize those symptoms. We do have scenarios where the disease burden is too great, meaning we got to you too late. In that scenario, we would recommend you for surgery. And surgery in that scenario, it doesn't sound as good. Patients will say, I just prefer the stents and get out of here. But I always tell patients, again, being good to your future self. And what we know in a lot of scenarios, multiple disease in multiple vessels would lend itself better to surgery. That surgery actually carries a survival benefit. You will live longer with surgery in addition to having your symptoms relieved. Stents in general only improve symptoms. Stents are sort of improve survival in scenarios where patients are having active heart attacks, right? So in that scenario where patients coming in and active chest pain and they have certain signatures on their EKG, those patients we can bring back from the brink of death. And that's an extremely satisfying scenario. Then we have the other side of the house, right? So you can have patients who, I just saw a patient the other day who was having multiple migraines, who's had a couple strokes, TIAs, and they have a hole in their heart. And so that patient will likely undergo a procedure where they have the hole in their heart closed with procedures that we can perform. And again, that's very satisfying, particularly when you see those patients 3 to 6 months out and they tell you their headaches are gone and no longer are they having these many strokes.
Yeah.
The other thing we talked about was the Watchman device, left atrial appendage occluder. So that's for patients with atrial fibrillation who cannot take blood thinners for one reason or another. And, you know, that's a discussion that you can have with the provider who's going to be implanting that device. But suffice it to say, you can now put a device into a small area of the heart to minimize their risk of stroke, and they now no longer have to take the strong blood thinners that they used to have. And then, you know, the additional category is patients who have something called severe aortic stenosis, and that is where the aortic valve, which is one of the main valves in the heart that separates the main pumping chamber of the heart from the rest of the body, that valve normally opens and closes, but you can get a scenario where a lot of calcium builds up on the valve and it restricts the ability for that valve to open, so you're not getting enough blood flow out of the heart. And we can, in years past, we would have to open up your chest and replace that valve. Now yeah. you can go in through the blood vessel and replace the valve or sort of implant another valve in the old valve's place. You know, there's pig and then there's sort of bovine varieties. But everything within cardiology, within cardiac surgery, is moving towards more of a minimally invasive approach. Patients get out the hospital sooner, shorter recovery, and can get back to the things that we want to do and still preserving, again, that quality and longevity for life.
It's always amazing when I've known people that have gone in for heart procedures and like you say, they're out and they're exercising almost, you know, right away.
Yeah, within 2 weeks, for a lot of, 2 to 4 weeks for a lot of these procedures, we expect patients to be back out and moving and getting back into the groove.
When you mentioned the calcium buildup, is that because of diet, or is that just something your body is collecting?
Excellent question. So it is what we call calcium handling, an issue with calcium handling. One of the things that we know is that in the body, when you have blockages, oftentimes calcium is present in the area. And so we can use the CT scan to identify the presence of the calcium, and oftentimes that means that you have a blockage associated with that calcium. And that's really what we're going after. The calcium is an indicator, if you will, that there may be blockages that need to be addressed. Patients will say, well, does that mean that I shouldn't take calcium and vitamin D? And I tell them that the jury is out. Some people say, well, you can minimize it, that there is an effect with elemental calcium or calcium that we take into the mouth. Mm-hmm. Some people say that there's no effect. And it's more about, again, calcium handling, the way that the individual cell handles the ability for calcium, shuttling the calcium out of the cell and into the bloodstream so that it can be kind of removed from the body. In some patients, that calcium sits around the cell and doesn't get removed. And so that's it's sort of more biological base, but suffice it to say, I don't know that we can definitively say that elemental calcium or calcium that we take in contributes to increased calcium in the blood vessels.
The heart is an amazing organ. Just amazing.
That's why I devoted my life to it. You're right. 100%. I agree.
when you talked about holes in the heart, how does that happen?
Yeah. So it's a developmental thing, and generally in development, when the babies are in or fetuses are in utero,
yeah,
the heart obviously develops, and there's certain portions of the heart that should close off. Tissue kind of moves in from, you know, up. If you put your hand one hand in the air and the other hand sort of down by your lap and move the hand down by your lap up and the hand up in the air down, right? You can see how you would create this ceiling or this wall, I should say wall, and close off kind of a potential opening. I wish you could see me, but you can't. And so sometimes the two tissues don't ever meet. And so that hole is present.
Yeah.
And that's really what we're kind of going after to try to close.
We are talking with Dr. Clarence Finley with Mary Washington Healthcare and cardiology are our focus this morning. We were talking off air before when we got going and with Mary Washington now having some residency patients and you talking to them.
Yeah.
What a great opportunity for them and for you, I would think.
100%. I think, you know, residents are our future, and I try to interact with them in a manner that I have to look at it like at some point I'll be laying in that hospital bed, and I want whoever's taking care of me to know what's going on and know how to treat me effectively, but also help to make that appropriate connection. Because I think that's an important part of healing. And so that's what I try to give to the residents. And so we currently have an internal medicine program, family medicine, and I think there are a couple other programs coming online in the future. And so we are, as cardiologists, and they have an educational line within the hospitalist team that focus specifically on internal medicine training, coming together to help ensure that these residents get the training that they need right here locally. And hopefully some of them choose to stay and bolster the healthcare that we're able to provide here in the community.
And that's what's exciting, if they decide to stay, because there's always needs and there's always those, you hear that everywhere.
Yeah.
And to get some of them to stay would be a huge plus.
That is the ultimate goal. And I think it'll happen. This year, I've only heard good things about the crop of residents that have come in, and I think that'll continue in the years to come for sure.
Dr. Clarence Finley here with Mary Washington Healthcare. One final break, and we'll conclude this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Clarence Finley here with Mary Washington Healthcare. Dr. Finley, it is just great to meet you, and I hope we can do this again sometime, just because what great information. And I liked when you talked about you can do part of it if I'm sitting in front of you, but after I walk out, I've got to be the one that changes my diet and exercises and those kinds of things.
100%. I think none of us really likes to take medications, and if we can all be in a position to take control of our health, commandeer our health, that's sort of the most ideal state. And so the goal is take control of, you know, diet and exercise. I think if you were to ask me today what I would consider be the take-home points or the highlights for this discussion, there'd be several. I think the first of which is exercise, or the difference rather between exercise and activity, and making sure that we have defined time for ourselves throughout the day. That would constitute exercise, but maintaining activity, keeping active is very important, trying to minimize a sedentary lifestyle. I think the second thing would be if we have a strong family history, touching base with our primary care providers and talking about maybe potentially doing a calcium score to get a sense as to, from a risk standpoint, where we fall on that spectrum and put things in place so that we can minimize the blow if it ever happens.
At 40,
yes. I think the other thing to talk about is that, you know, we can't see taking medications and exercising as staving off everything, right? And so I think the perspective has to be, everything that I'm doing now, it'll either stave it off or minimize the blow when it does happen. And that's really an important point, because I get a lot of patients who get discouraged by the fact that they're not seeing the results that they want to see, meaning I exercise and diet and I still had a heart attack. But they need to understand that it probably would have been worse had they not been doing all the right things. And so keeping that front and center, top of mind, I think is important. One of the last things I'll say is the importance of a good primary care physician, someone you have a good relationship with. Because when things do happen, you want to make sure that that individual can usher you through the medical process and refer you to the people that they trust and know that will take good care of you and get you back to doing the things that you need to do and want to do. And we have a good primary care network here within Mary Washington for you to access or wherever. But most importantly, just make sure that you establish that care with a primary care physician so that you can be ushered through appropriately. And then lastly, just put in the plug for what we can do here locally. We talked about heart cats, we talked about TAVRs, we talked about Watchmen's, we talked about closing holes in hearts. Those are the things that we can offer, and if you need it, we're here to help.
That's what's great that you all are locally here, and then I like when you said you plan on being here. And people can trust that. You also mentioned just about, and I had not heard this, and this excited me. I wrote it down and circled it and thought, there's some people I need to talk to about this, about the importance of a plant-based diet, and that can reverse some things.
Yeah, so there's plenty of data to support this assertion. I'm not making it up, but the whole food plant-based diet in particular, you have to look up those specific terms, has a lot of data behind it. It actually reverses heart disease, right? So we've had patients who, let's say, for whatever reason, you can't put in a stent. They've had too many stents. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough other options. Surgery is not an option for them. You can't get an additional stent in there. And they completely revamp their lifestyle and pursue a whole food plant-based diet. And those folks will start to tell you that they feel better. They can do more. They can get, you know, get things done, less of the fatigue, et cetera. So there is a reverse process that does occur. Diabetes is sort of the same thing. One place that I tell people, if you have Amazon Prime, one thing to look at is a documentary called Forks Over Knives. Forks Over Knives on Amazon Prime. And that's a good way to kind of get you into understanding what the whole food plant-based diet is about.
So it may be a radical change for you, but it also may keep you alive.
Longevity and quality is what we're looking for.
And you talk you have talked all along about quality, and that's obviously something important, and that you're striving to with your patients.
That's correct, and myself.
And exercise, the exercise versus activity was so interesting to me, because I've always assumed that the day I mow, that's my There's my exercise for the day, and you have said not so fast.
Yeah, no, I think you have to have defined time just for you, and that's extra. That's strenuous activity. It's good. It counts, but it's extra. And so that's more in the activity bucket. We want to make sure that we're exercising and active, and that will the mowing will qualify as active. But make sure that you have that defined time that no one can disrupt.
And again, if you've got something in your family, when you get to 40, look into this calcium score.
That's correct.
And that will help you. Score. Dr. Clarence Finley. Dr. Finley, it is great to have you here this morning. Thank you so much. I hope we can do this, because you have a great way of describing and explaining things. And this is important stuff. Welcome to the community, too.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you for having me here. And I do look forward to more discussion. Appreciate it.
Dr. Clarence Finley, an interventional cardiologist with Mary Washington Healthcare. That is it for the show. Thank you for listening. We will see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.